Part 3. Obstacles and Openings. Childhood's End. A clear, deep inner voice is latent in us from earliest childhood, but it is latent only. The adventures, difficulties, and even suffering inherent in growing up can serve to develop or educe our original voice, but more often they bury it. Because most of our intuitions are built on the Lockean fantasy that the newborn person is a tabula rasa on which knowledge is built up like a pyramid, we tend to erase our children's innate from-the-top-down knowledge and try to fill them instead with simplistic bottoms-up knowledge. The child we were and are learns by exploring and experimenting. Even television and pop music, in addition to school, can help inculcate mass-produced conformity. The simplicity, intelligence, and power of the mind at play becomes homogenized into complexity, conformity, and weakness. We often make the mistake of confusing education with training, when in fact these are very different activities. Training is for the purpose of passing on specific information necessary to perform a specialized activity. Education is the building of the person. To educe means to draw out or evoke that which is latent. Education then means drawing out the person's latent capacities for understanding and living, not stuffing a passive person full of preconceived knowledge. Education must tap into the close relationship between play and exploration. There must be permission to explore and express. There must be validation of the exploratory spirit, which by definition takes us out of the tired and tested and the homogeneous. Conformity resembles what biologists call monoculture. Monoculture is an anathema to learning. You can't express inspiration without skill, but if you are too wrapped up in the professionalism of skill, you obviate the surrender to accident that is essential to inspiration. It is possible for an artist to have stupendous technical prowess, and yet there may be something lacking. The professionalism of technique and the flash of dexterity are more comfortable to be around than raw creative power. Hence, our society generally rewards virtuoso performers more highly than it rewards original creators. It is relatively easy to judge and evaluate technical brilliance. Spiritual and emotional content are not so easy to evaluate. It is not always true that the books, the music, the movies, and the TV shows that sell well are trashy or mindless, but it is true often enough. We block our creativity by labeling it. We segregate it further from ordinary life by establishing systems of star performers. The value of one's work is not dependent on its quality, but on one's name. When an artist changes and develops over the years, as is natural to any creative person, such change is met by howls of protests from the marketers, and sometimes an artist starts with something extraordinary, becomes a star, and then their gift is either frozen or perverted. We suppress, deny, rationalize, forget the muse's message because we are told that the voice of inner knowing is not real. Creative living, or the life of a creator, seems to leap into the unknown only because, quote, normal life is rigid and traumatized. Aaron Copland, American composer, instead of complaining, tells us, quote, the fun of the fight against the musical Philistines, the sorties and strategies, the converts won, and the hot arguments with dull-witted critics partly explain the particular excitement of that period when I was composing, end quote. That attitude takes all the crassness and stupidity of the world and makes it the occasion for a game. If a creative person has a sense of humor, a sense of style, and a certain amount of stubbornness, he finds a way to do what he needs to in spite of the obstacles. There is no such thing as society, and there is no such thing as institutions, schools, the media, and the rest of it. There are only people doing their imperfect best at doing their imperfect jobs. The marrow of the matter is that we cannot avoid childhood's end. The free play of imagination creates illusions, and illusions bump into reality and get disillusioned. And if you think you could have avoided the disenchantment of childhood's end by having had some advantage, like a more enlightened education or more money or material benefits or a better teacher, talk to people who who have had those advantages, and you will find they bump into just as much disillusion because the fundamental blockages are not an external part of us, but part of life. A true master is one who has grown up, undergone hard experience, and transcended it. Vicious circles. The creative process of free play and concentrated practice can go spinning off into addiction or procrastination. Addiction is excessive compulsive attachment. Procrastination is excessive compulsive avoidance. There is a fine line between the pathological and the creative, between addiction and practice. Addiction consumes energy and leads to slavery. Practice generates energy and leads to freedom. In practice, the act becomes more and more expansive. In addiction, we are folding inward into more sameness, more dullness. Practice is an ever-fresh, challenging flow of work and play in which we continually test and demolish our own delusions. Therefore, it is sometimes painful. In procrastination, we believe the less is safer. Procrastination is the mirror of addiction. Both are disorders of self-regulation. The body's feedback loops in the human being are a continuous dance of self-correcting play through the power of mistakes. The ego wants to be right, but in the dynamics of life and art, we are never right. We are always changing and cycling. Nervous fidgeting in all activities that expend energy at cross purposes to our chosen direction are symptoms of the fear of emptiness. Shorter and shorter attention spans are inculcated in us by the rhythms of society, which become increasingly nervous and jittery, which shorten our attention spans further, another vicious circle. Underneath procrastination and fidgeting lies self-doubt. The inevitable back and forth of feedback can be experienced in different states of mind, self-trimming practice, addiction or procrastination, wandering desires, anger, or spiritual or real suicide. The fundamental thing about vicious circles is that there is no logical way out. But fortunately, there are a number of non-logical ways out. But before we look at these, we look at what underlies the vicious circles: fear. The judging specter. The creative person can be seen as embodying a muse or an editor. A muse and an editor. The muse proposes and the editor disposes. The trick for the creative person is to be able to tell the difference between the two kinds of judgment and cultivate constructive judgment. The feedback between constructive judgment and the ongoing creative work goes back and forth at more than lightning speed. It goes in no time, eternity. When judgment is obstructive, our personal time is chopped into segments. The easiest way to do art is to dispense with success and failure altogether and just get on with it. The afflictive emotions include envy, anger, greed, and self-importance, but their root, like the root of addiction, procrastination, and other forms of blockage, is fear. Deviation from the true self often arises from comparison with or envy of the idealized other, be it a parent, lover, teacher, past master, hero, etc. Perfectionism arrests us perhaps more effectively than any other block. To a certain extent, we can identify the mysterious specter as the self-clinging habits of the ego. Introjection, which is the automatic internalization of the parental and other voices that throw doubt on whether we are good enough, smart enough, or the right size or shape, and also wishful voices that indicate that we should be who we should be and what we should be like to have, who we should be and what we should like to have. Both hope and fear are functions of the judging specter. No matter what the external circumstances of our life, fear is internally fed, imposed by one part of ourselves onto another. The judging specter gives these fears a familiar face and personifies them. It is exceedingly easy for us to externalize or to look for these judging factors outside ourselves in all the persons or factors that may be putting us down, getting in our way. We can spend a lifetime searching and blaming everyone and everything else around us for the frustrations of our blocked creative voice. Surrender. The intuition discovered, the unconscious made conscious, is always a surprise. Disappear, and the music starts to really cook. Suddenly, the players and the listeners find themselves elsewhere, and the music has moved everyone. You must feel comfortable relinquishing a certain degree of control and simply stay out of the way. One of the great traps at times of blockage is that we may accuse ourselves of a deficit of concentration and focus. We then take a paternal or militaristic attitude towards ourselves and will force ourselves to work. Discipline is crucial, but we'll not attain it by stiffening up. We attain it by sitting still and penetrating the emptiness within, making of that emptiness a friend rather than an adversary or bogeyman. When you are stuck, meditate, free associate, stay in the temenos of the workplace, relax, surrender. Persevere gently, use intelletto. The surrender has got to be genuine, uncontrived, and wholehearted. And you have to really abandon all hope and fear with nothing to gain and nothing to lose. We are predisposed to believe that the world consists of things and forces that move things. But like any living entity, the system of musicians plus instruments plus listeners plus environment is an indivisible interactive totality. There is something false about splitting it up into parts. Playing an instrument is a sport in which we are dancing with an object that has a life of its own, partly yielding and partly resisting. The yielding and resisting qualities form an infinitely structured and self-maintaining pattern, which is the continuously changing, moving, playing, dying, and cycling through its own life history. Linked with the instrument, the body and mind, we scout for the effortless way. We arrive at this effortless way not by mastering the instrument, but by playing with it as a living partner. Unless you surrender your identity, the instrument's identity, and the illusion of control, you will never become one with the process, and the blocks will remain. Without surrender and trust, there is nothing. To create, you have to disappear. Only unconditional surrender leads to real emptiness. From that place of emptiness, you can be prolific and free. To the extent that you empty yourself, you can be a spiritual artist. Unconditional surrender comes when you fully realize that what your life or art has handed you is bigger than your hands, bigger than any conscious understanding you can have of it, and bigger than any capacity that is yours alone. Patience. A faithful attitude is a workmanlike attitude. It's non-dualistic. You and your work are one. If life and art are one, we feel free to work through each sentence, each note, each color, as though we had infinite amounts of time and energy. Having this lavish, abundant disposition towards our time and our identity, we can persevere with a steady and cheerful confidence, and thus accomplish infinitely more and better things. Faith is the inner dimension of patience. It is important to step back from time to time to have a look at your life and art from the long view, from perspectives that telescope large amounts of space and time. The artificial separation of work from play also cleaves our time and the quality of our attention. The attitude of faith says that I and my work are one, and we are organically immanent in one bigger reality. The fruits of improvising, composing, writing, inventing, and discovering may flower spontaneously, but they arise from soil that we have prepared, fertilized, and tended in the faith that they will ripen in nature's own time. Ripening. Insights and breakthroughs often come during periods of pause or refreshment after great labors. There is a preparatory period of accumulating data followed by some essential but unforeseen transformation. Not doing can sometimes be more productive than doing. Creative despair feels rotten when it overtakes us, but it is necessary. It is a symptom that we are throwing our whole being into the problem. The creative surprise often takes place when the pressures come off in an episode of relaxation or surrender. We need space and time reserved from the rushing and pressures of everyday life, reserved for going inside ourselves for rest, review, and revelation. Carl Jung writes, "The art of letting things happen, action and non-action, letting go of oneself, as taught by Meister Eckhart, became the key to me with which I was able to open the door to the way." The key is this: we must be able to let things happen in the psyche. This becomes a real art of which few people know anything. Consciousness is forever interfering, helping, correcting, and negating, and never leaving the simple growth of the psychic process in peace. It would be a simple enough thing to do if only simplicity were not the most difficult of all things. There is a place in our mind and body to which we can turn and listen. If we go in there and become quiet, we can start to bring the music up. The stuffing of consciousness with knowledge and then ripening it in the subconscious can occur as one, just as improvisation, judgment, and free play occur as one.